Good morning. Can you all hear me well? Is that a good level? All right. Well, I'd like to start a three-week series on the book of Proverbs. Need to start off by saying it's with a little bit of a fear and trepidation that I begin this study. First of all, one of the main reasons is we just spent a good hour before God's throne and meditating on his death and his resurrection and his shed blood for us. And I want nothing in these next 3 weeks to take away from the reality of that. And I don't want a Sunday school series or time this next hour to take our eyes off of what Christ has done. And so I want us to be careful of that. Proverbs is a little bit of a different book. It doesn't deal with Jesus Christ and his death. It deals with some other things that maybe sometimes we find them to be a little abstract. But I don't want it to take our mind off of what Christ has done. Second of all, is maybe my inadequacy for the past. I feel that quite a bit as I get into this. Usually a smart teacher will pick a topic that they have some confidence in and maybe something that they have something valuable to say. Well, obviously I'm not a smart teacher because neither are true. We'll kind of struggle together. We'll all stumble together at this. I am not an Old Testament scholar. But I do want to say the book of Proverbs has touched me in, I think, a very profound way. I've been reading through the Bible the last 2 years, and I'm finally to the book of Proverbs, so it's taken me a while. And in the last month and a half, I have not gotten past the book of Proverbs. In fact, 1 week I spent on one chapter. And I say that to show you that some of these concepts have really touched me deeply. They have convicted me. They have amazed me. They touched me. And so it's this reason I want to present this study, maybe excite you into the book of Proverbs, to intrigue you, to get you thinking, boy, I want to spend some time looking at some of these concepts and the reality for what they will do in my life. And so maybe that's just how I'll begin, with saying that's a backdrop for this study. Let's just begin. I want to get you involved as much as possible. This week, there's kind of a lot of introduction stuff. And so we'll kind of wade through that just because I think it's an important backdrop for what we're going to do. And then next couple weeks, I'm hoping for a lot more discussion. But maybe just to begin with, if you hear the book of Proverbs, somebody mentions that title, what are some images that come to your mind? What are some concepts that come to your mind? Maybe what are even some verses that come to your mind if you hear the book of Proverbs? Let me hear from you for a minute. Wisdom. And that's something we're going to drill over and over again because that is just absolutely central to the book. And especially next week, we're going to talk about wisdom. What else comes to your mind? Right. And some of them are humorous. We can spend some time on. Let me read to you just a couple that I read this one this morning. I'm not a morning person. In fact, I had to get up really early this morning just so my lips could function. And so if you're not a morning person, you'll appreciate this one. Proverbs 27:14 says, "If a man loudly blesses his neighbor early in the morning, it will be taken as a curse." I like that one. That one touches me right there. That's the one I spent the whole week on. No, I'm just kidding. As a ring of gold in a swine's snout, so is a beautiful woman who lacks discretion. That's a profound image right there. And kind of what Doc's talking about. These things, you can actually picture. You know, what Solomon or whoever wrote this one is is actually trying to say. Let me read a couple other ones. It's better to live in the corner of a roof than in a house shared with a contentious woman. I like this one. Like one who binds a stone in a sling, so is he who gives honor to a fool. And you can just imagine this person trying to throw that stone, and yet it's bound in there. They're nailing themselves. And, these images come through. Like a dog who returns to its vomit is a fool who repeats his folly. That's a well-known one. He who digs a pit will fall into it, and he who rolls a stone, it will come back on him. These are kind of some of the things that you're talking about. Cute little saying, but they're packed with important things for us. What are some other things that come to your mind if you think of Proverbs? Yeah. Well, I tell you, that's one of the most beautiful, I think that's one of the most beautiful passages in the Bible. And certainly when you think of Proverbs, that passage has got to come to your mind. When I was back in Syracuse as a youth pastor, trying to make the decision whether I should come out and continue my studies, for 6 months, I remember every single day, probably two or three times a day, saying that phrase, saying that passage to me over and over again, because I'm kind of thick-skulled and it takes me a lot of time to get something into me. But boy, what a power-packed couple of verses that is. What else comes to your mind? Any other things? Yeah, that's a good point. You'll see that again and again throughout the book of Proverbs, that there is the sharp dichotomy, that he'll say one thing and then he'll just throw the opposite right at you. So you see them, and you see how far apart they are, whatever the truth might be. Any other thing? Right. Yeah. One of the ones that comes to my mind, foremost, and this is Proverbs 6, that says there are six things the Lord hates, seven that are detestable to him. And he goes through this list: haughty eyes, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked schemes, feet that are quick to rush into evil, a false witness who pours out lies, and a man who stirs up dissension among brothers. I remember being in a church meeting just with our pastors at this church, and we were talking about church discipline. And we were talking about some of the more recognizable sins in a church. Adultery, different kinds of fornication, different things like that. And yet at the same time, we'd had a problem with some people in the church that were kind of gossiping. I remember going to this passage in that meeting and really feeling burdened that, you know, we're dealing with these big issues, and yet there are seven things that the Lord hates, and the last one is a man who stirs up dissension among brothers. So the warning is powerful. Any other things? I don't want to turn anybody off. Book of Proverbs is a powerful book. Sometimes you'll hear people say, a good way to go through devotions is to spend a couple chapters in Psalms and then to read one proverb a day for 31 days. And certainly that is a good idea also. But those are some of the things that you'll hear about when you think of the book of Proverbs. Someone once told me, I remember many years ago, well not many years ago, it seems like many years ago, but someone sat down to me and they said, If you want to acquire wisdom, you want to be wise, read the book of Proverbs. And I remember as a young man taking that into heart and pouring through this book numerous times, and it didn't happen. In fact, wisdom still escapes me. I still do foolish things. I amaze myself with unclear thinking and illogical deductions at times. Wisdom's constantly escaping me. But I think that this is what this man was trying to say, and this is one of the important points of Proverbs, is that just reading the book of Proverbs will not make you wise. These anecdotes, these short sayings, the power path, that they themselves will not make you wise, but the key to the book of Proverbs is that in Proverbs there is the formula, or there is the secret for acquiring wisdom. And it is that that we need to grab onto. It's that that we need to dig into this book and say, I want the formula. I want to find out how to acquire wisdom. Anybody can memorize. Anybody can remember, go to the ant, you sluggard. Anybody can remember something like that and repeat it to themselves. But unless you take the formula for acquiring wisdom, unless you find out the secret to grasping knowledge, then it's escaped you. And so that's one of the things that I'm hoping that we're going to do. Maybe just some basic guidelines as we begin. In this case, these next 3 weeks, the teacher does not necessarily know best. I feel that very strongly. And so feel free to correct me or to add on to some of the things that I'm saying, because that's really important to me. Also, in 3 weeks, there's no possible way we're going to go through 31 chapters. It's just not going to happen. And I'm not even going to try to. So it's not like we're going to begin with the first 10 chapters this week and hope in 3 weeks to cover it all, because I'm not going to come close. So what we're going to do instead is I hope to pick out a few themes and take those themes, and I hope those themes will arouse your curiosity, and that you'll be able to take these themes from the book of Proverbs and then yourself in your own time go back into the book and see how they relate and how they touch your life. And so that's what I'm hoping for. Let's begin with a question. How do we interpret the book of Proverbs? This is a hermeneutic question, maybe something that we're not going to get deeply into, just because, to be honest with you, I don't understand all the intricacies, and I would be foolish to try to communicate them with you. But how do we interpret the book of Proverbs? To begin with, let me ask you, what is the literary genre of the book of Proverbs? In the gospel, we have narrative. We also have parables. In a book like Revelation, we have apocalyptic literature. We know that. We have historical narrative all throughout the Old Testament. What's the literary genre of the book of Proverbs? Wisdom literature. Anybody know any other books in the Bible that also contain wisdom literature? Anyone want to take a guess? Ecclesiastes? Okay, Psalms, got some. There's one other main one. One of the oldest books, maybe the oldest book, Job. Those three constitute really the framework for wisdom literature. Wisdom literature goes way back. It's a very old tradition. It's not just that Jews would write wisdom literature, but that we find it in the Egyptian culture, and a lot of the other older cultures will also find series of sayings that look a lot like the book of Proverbs. And so we know that there's a lot of similarities, that when Solomon and different people were writing these things, they weren't creating something new necessarily, but they were standing on a tradition that went back. But there are distinctives. That's not to say that the book of Proverbs is just the same as Egyptian wisdom literature. There's very profound differences between that. Some New Testament passages also have wisdom literature. It's said that Romans 12, as you look through Romans 12, can be interpreted as wisdom literature. Maybe James, the first three chapters have some. Maybe even 1 Corinthians 1 through 3 talks a lot about knowledge. and wisdom, and maybe even chapter 13 that talks about love. So wisdom literature has its distinctives, and some of the distinctives are maybe some of the things that you have already mentioned, kind of the dichotomy. If this is true, so also this is true. Kind of the beatitude kind of style, blessed be, or even warnings like Dick mentioned. These are kind of some of the distinctives of wisdom literature. Right. And I think that's a point well taken. Something that maybe I kind of decided I didn't want to get into just because of its depth, but how do you interpret this wisdom literature is an important question. Some of the things that people do often, or sometimes kind of to do disservice to it, is they'll take one of these sayings completely out of context. And we need to be careful. There are some things, for example, in the book of Proverbs that sound an awful lot like wealth, health and wealth gospel. You know, that you will succeed. And yet, as you look at it within the context, you understand that it's not necessarily saying that every Christian is going to succeed in life through prosperity, but it's saying that here are some guidelines. And I was going to bring that up, but I didn't think maybe we'd have time. And so we need to be careful with, there's a lot of different forms of wisdom literature. And we need to understand, as we look at it, is this being literal? Should this be taken literal? And oftentimes, we need to just be careful because it should be taken literal. Or that, as Josh said, maybe it does not occur all the time. But I don't want that to take away from the scope or the impact of what Proverbs stands for. That we should not take this as a cast of gloom over the whole book and just say, well, a lot of the stuff just doesn't apply. I think that's false. I think it's very applicable to today. Who authored Proverbs? I kind of already said, but who authored Proverbs? It says in the very first, look at Solomon and who? King Lemuel. And there's one other person that's mentioned in there. Agur, I don't know how to say that, but Lemuel is noted for chapter 31. For chapter 30. A large portion of the rest of that is attributed to Solomon. It says that in the very first chapter. We find Solomon's name right there. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. You can look to this kind of on your own if you want to, but 1 Kings 4:32 tells us that Solomon spoke 3,000 proverbs and 1,005 songs. And so we know that Solomon, wrote these proverbs and songs throughout his life, and they were put together, and later on in the book, we're told that some of the scribes of Hezekiah kind of put these together and kind of formed them. They took Solomon's writings and kind of built them together. So that's kind of a backdrop. Solomon's the main contributor, especially the first 9 chapters are attributed to Solomon, and then other parts are kind of pieced together here and there. Let's start talking about wisdom. And to do that, if you can pull out your little handout that I had passed around. Let's just kind of go through this. I think this is an important backdrop again before we get into this. We need to define our terms. This is another important areas. We look at the hermeneutics of the book of Proverbs. That what does it mean, for example, to be a fool? Well, in our culture, the word fool kind of carries different connotations with it. We think of a jokester, maybe. We think of somebody that's got no common sense, that's closer to the truth. Maybe we even think of somebody that just cognitively they don't have it up here. And one of the things that we'll see is that those aren't entirely true of what a fool means. And so let's just go through some of these things and try to look at what their meaning is. First of all, I need to have you include something. I missed one. End of the wise man. We have understanding, wise dealing, shrewdness and discretion, knowledge and learning. One of the main ones, attributes of a wise man is instruction or training. That should probably be the very first one. If you have the book of Proverbs out there, if you open up to the very first chapter, we can see a few things. These are attributes of a wise man. And we're going to talk about more of what it means to be wise next week. But this is kind of a working definition of a wise man, working definition of all these different things. First of all, a wise man needs instruction or training. Look at Proverbs 1:2. Well, first of all, the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, for attaining wisdom and discipline, for understanding words of insight. This is the NIV that I'm reading out of. For attaining wisdom and discipline. That word discipline is actually this word instruction or training. It's not just a thing of the mind. And I think what the NIV is doing here is it's trying to bring out the fact that in our post-enlightenment culture, in our modern culture, we think of instruction, we think of knowledge. What do we think of? We think of facts, right? Maybe all week long you're dealing with facts. You're working with things, numbers, you're needing to memorize things, you're needing to put things together. Certainly students, as they come back from spring break, are dreading the fact that they're going to need to memorize facts, that they need to be held accountable for knowledge. And so in our modern culture, we think often of knowledge or instruction just in terms of words or numbers. But what the NIV is bringing out here is that's not true. It's not just a thing of the mind, but it's a thing of the character. Okay? And this word instruction and training is there's a high correlation with this word to reproof and correction. That's another big part of the book of Proverbs is it talks about somebody that and their ability to handle reproof and correction. And this word discipline will come out again and again. That as we're talking about knowledge, we need to try to create in our mind to not just think of figures, not just think of memorizing scripture, or not just thinking of who's smarter. This person's got a higher SAT score, or this person has a higher IQ. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about their ability to handle reproof and correction. We're talking about their ability to have their character shaped by the things that they know. And so that's what this word is really talking about. Wise dealing. Well, let's go to understanding first. Understanding and insight. The root word of this, understanding insight, has two close language relations. The word discern is closely related, and also the word between. And in our English, we can put those together and discern between. And that's kind of the root understanding of what it means to have insight. 1 Kings 3:9 says that Solomon was able to discern between good and evil. And that's really what this word is talking about, understanding. Wise dealing. This seems a lot more practical. It almost sounds successful. Look at verse 3 right there. For acquiring a disciplined and prudent life. That word prudent is actually the word that I have here translated wise dealing. It's the same word, but it's just translated different in the English. And I think one of the things that's interesting about this, it almost carries with it an air of success. But right next to success, look at the next few words in verse 3. For acquiring a disciplined and prudent life, doing what is right, just, and fair. And that word right is also the same word for righteousness. And so as he's introducing these concepts into the book of Proverbs, he's talking about something that almost sounds of success, but he's taking that word success and he's putting it next to righteousness. And so we need to understand that that Solomon is introducing concepts that are closely related to a godly lifestyle. It's not just to be successful, but it's to be successful within the confines of doing what is right, what is just, what is fair. And I think that's an important point. Shrewdness and discretion. The wise man in verse 22:3 says, the wise man sees evil and hides himself. This word shrewdness, in our understanding of the word shrewd, it can almost have a negative connotation, can it? Somebody can be shrewd and still have bad morals or have an undisciplined, ungodly life. But the wise person is shrewd with discretion. And these two words go closely together, hand in hand. And the last one is knowledge and learning. And one of the interesting things that you'll see as you look at the book of Proverbs, this word knowledge is brought up again and again, and it's often equated with knowledge of God himself. Look at chapter 2, verse 5. Then you will understand the fear of the Lord, and you will find the knowledge of God. As I bring up these five, what do all these words have in common? What are some similarities that you see in all of them? What's something that Solomon is definitely trying to teach us through our definition of these words? The idea. Okay, and how would define accurately? Okay, and that's a really important connection for our progress. And Proverbs does not say that we are not to progress. In fact, the book of Proverbs says that we are believers, and we're going to talk about that a little bit more. We are to progress. But it's that connection between our progress and the glory of God. We would say the glory of God. Proverbs says it a little different than that. And so the connection that I want you to see is that these words all are issues of practicality in life, but they center around two important things. One is morality. And the other thing is God-centeredness. And so as we understand what these terms mean, as you hear them, as you read through Proverbs, these two issues come back again and again, that they are issues of morality and that they center around God. And maybe this is an important side note, that in today's culture, we talk a lot about these same terms, don't we? We talk about understanding, insight. The world, and I'm talking within our secular context, talks about wise dealing, practical sense, good sense. In the business world, you hear it all the time. These words come out again and again. But I think that as we look at our contemporary world, they have taken these concepts and they have stripped them of the two things that are most important to them. They have stripped them of morality and they have stripped them of God-centeredness. And so we now hear instruction. We now hear good sense, wise dealing. Let's take this word wise dealing. I'm not a businessman. I don't know much about business. But I would say that wise dealing is mentioned a lot within business, but it's not a godly wise dealing. It's kind of pushing yourself to the front. Whatever helps you, maybe at the expense of somebody else. And so these words, that Solomon is saying, These words are powerful words, and we're going to talk about wisdom and God's wisdom. We're going to talk about God's knowledge, and that we cannot strip these words of morality, and we can't strip them of God-centeredness. Let's go quickly through some of these other things. The friend. Another word for this is neighbor. You'll see that throughout the book of Proverbs. Talks about the friend being a person of peace, a person of silence. I think that's insightful. A person who helps, a person who avoids trouble. Some of the other words that kind of will relate to that are constancy. Constancy. Right in chapter 18, verse 24 says, the person who has many friends may find trouble, but there is a friend that sticketh close, that sticks closer than a brother. And just the power of what it means to really be a friend. Candor. Verse chapter 27, verse 6 says, faithful are the words of a friend. I can't read my own handwriting. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. And again, we're coming back to this idea of discipline. And that in order to be a person of discipline, a person of instruction, how do you handle it when somebody comes to you, especially a friend, and corrects you? Well, somebody that's really a friend, when they come to us and they point out something in our life, that we take that very seriously, exactly. And we really look at our life because we know that they care for us and that we know that they know us. So, faithful are the wounds of a friend. Counsel, chapter 27, verse 9 says, a man's counsel is sweet to a friend. And then tact, some good passages there. Chapter 26, verses 18 and 19, maybe put a star by that and look at that passage, because I think it's important, because it brings up the idea of joking. And I think in our culture there's a lot of joking that goes around, and often our jokes are full of kind of a seriousness to them, and sometimes our jokes are a little cutting. And we need to be careful. A.W. Tozer tells us that some of the marks of a spiritual man, one of the marks of a spiritual man is what he thinks is funny. And we need to look within ourselves and say, what makes me laugh? And is it sometimes when I'm playing a joke at somebody's expense that hurts them? And a friend will not do that. A friend has tact. The simple, another word for the simple is naive. Definitions, easily led, gullible, silly. But this next phrase is really important. That the simple person is morally willful and irresponsible. It's not just a matter of they aren't concerned about things, that maybe they just lead a simple lifestyle. When we think of simple, we think of somebody that just can live off not very much. And we don't necessarily mean that to be a negative attribute. But the simple person, the naive person, is morally willful. That means that they are not lacking in their will. And this is a theme right throughout that we're going to talk about. Look at chapter 7 for a second. This talks about the naive person, the simple person. Starting at verses 6 through 11. At the window of my house, I looked out through the lattice. I saw among the simple, I noticed among the young men, a youth who lacked judgment. He was going down the street near her corner, walking along in the direction of her house. As twilight, as the day was fading, as the dark of night set in, then out came a woman to meet him, dressed like a prostitute and with a crafty intent. She is loud and defiant. Her feet never stay at home. Skip over to verse 22, because just in between there, it kind of gives the descriptive look into what happens to this naive, this simple young man. All at once he followed her, like an ox going to the slaughter, like a deer stepping into a noose, till an arrow pierces his liver. like a bird darting into a snare, little knowing him that will cost him his life. Solomon's painting the picture here of somebody that's just not simple in their lifestyle, but they're naive. And they're actually moving in the direction of evil. Solomon said that an important attribute of knowledge is to discern between good and evil. Well, the naive person doesn't do that. They don't discern. They're not even able to see between good and evil because they've chosen that they don't want to see between good and evil. And so they go out in the direction knowing that this woman will see them, knowing that this woman will probably entice them, not necessarily saying, I am going to do evil. Okay, we see that later as we look at maybe the fool or the scoffer. But the simple person just puts themselves in position around evil. And then all of a sudden, the things start tugging. And they see the enticement. And they don't have any barriers. They don't have any lines drawn. And so they just allow themselves to move in that direction. Look at the fool, one who is dull and obstinate. Chapter 17, verses 10 talks about 100 blows to a fool will not compel them to change. And so, that's a pretty picturesque image. The root of his problem is spiritual and not mental. And, I think that's really important for us to realize also that the fool is not somebody who, just is mentally deficient. The fool is somebody who spiritually recognizes what is wrong and just will not choose to head in that direction. Moral insolence, making a mockery of sin. Chapter 14, verse 9 says, fools mock at sin. Does this make you think of any other passage? What other passage, especially in Psalm, talks about the fool? The fool says in his heart that there is no God. Psalm 14:1. And so the fool is not somebody that's just, again, mentally deficient. The fool is somebody that, it's a spiritual problem. It's a willful problem. That the fool is somebody that actually chooses and will not accept reproof. 2 Corinthians 4:4 says, the God of this age has blinded the minds of the unbeliever. And I think that we could probably make a correlation there to somebody that's a fool. The fool goes along with that. The fool allows the God of this age to blind their mind, and so that they're not able to see what is right. And that talks about the closed-mindedness. A couple other things. The scoffer. Again, an important note, wisdom's not equated with mental powers. The scoffer has great mental powers, but is completely lacking in wisdom. It's a dislike of correction. Actually, Solomon says, do not reprove a scoffer lest he hate you. Now, I think that what he's probably saying there is not don't reprove a scoffer, but recognize that what's important is not whether he likes you or hates you, because he will hate you. And that if you try to reprove him, and you can reprove him all you want, and his hatred for you is going to grow and grow and grow. And then he says, but instead, reprove a wise person, because the wise person will listen to you and will correct themselves. So the scoffer is somebody that doesn't like correction. They're a deliberate troublemaker. And in chapter 21, Solomon says he acts with insolent pride. Pride is an important part of the scoffer's life. The scoffer has a tightly woven character filled with pride, and they may know what is right and what is wrong, and they choose deliberately to do what is wrong, and even to make a mockery of it. And maybe we can think in our own lives of people that we've seen around that would describe what a scoffer's life is about. And last is the sluggard. And the sluggard is not just somebody that's a little lethargic, a little bit that maybe they have a slow metabolism or something. That's not what the sluggard is. The sluggard's noncommittal. Solomon says, how long will you lie down? How long will you stay there? Well, the sluggard will just stay there as long as they want, because They don't want to act. They don't want to do. No perseverance. No courage. And no courage. I like this in chapter 26. The scoffer says, to actually even leaving his own house, he says, there might be a lion out there. I don't want to leave my house. There might be a lion out there that's going to devour me. So the sluggard will create these images in his mind that these things are going to happen to him if he acts a certain way. And so it just induces his laziness. And he's restless with unsatisfied desire. Well, this is important. I'm sorry I had to kind of go through this without a lot of discussion, but I do want to ask you a couple questions. We don't really have time to talk about them right now, but the point behind Proverbs is that God is applying wisdom of God to practical issues of life, and that this integration of wisdom to everyday life is extremely important. It's trying, another phrase is, its function in Scripture is to put godliness into working clothes. Let me ask you this question as we leave, and I want you to kind of think about it, because we're going to pick it up when we come back, and it's kind of as homework. I'm kind of hoping that you give a little thought to this. Two questions. How do we harmonize this common sense-ism of a book such as Proverbs, with a New Testament understanding of the foolishness of the cross? How do we put these two things together? On the one hand, we have a book of Proverbs that says that here are practical insights that will lead you along a road towards success. Now, that success is defined a certain way, and that may be one of the things that we'll talk about, but there's a lot of common sense behind the book of Proverbs. And yet we move into the New Testament, and we hear something like the foolishness of the cross in 1 Corinthians chapters 1 through 3. And we're told to understand that there are parts of Scripture that will not make sense, and that they're foolishness to the world around us. So how do we put these things together? Maybe another question along these lines is, can an unbeliever be wise? Another question for you. Those two things we're going to come back to next week. I'm hoping for a lot of discussion next week, so do your homework. Read through the book of Proverbs. Be excited about it. Let's close in a word of prayer. Father, we're thankful for your word, and we recognize that it is your word imparted into our lives, that we may be built up and rooted in you. Father, I pray that your word would touch us not just today in your Lord's Day, but it would touch us all week long, that we would continually be led to go back to your word, and that as a deer panteth for the water, we would desire for you. And once we have tasted of you, that taste would not satisfy us, but would create within us an urging for more of a taste. Father, that we would continue to grow in our thirst for you. Help the study of your word, Father, to create that within our lives. Help us to grow in our holiness. Help us to grow in our understanding of your Son, Jesus Christ. In Jesus' name, amen.